was quite, not quite. Ah, that's Curtis Mayfield. Let that hear a minute. This song, in many ways, is part of a sub-theme about what we're about to talk about. Curtis Mayfield was born on this day, 1942, and a lot of his music touched the social concerns that we face in America. He was a socially conscious human being who put it out there with his words. We all miss his voice, but what he says are things we need to think about. When I hear this song, I think a lot about the issue we're about to talk about today, which is human trafficking. You can lower it now. is human trafficking, because slavery. I emceed an event last night on the Emancipation Proclamation with an incredible choir and original score on the Emancipation Proclamation from the Florida Baptist Church in Washington, D.C. It was an amazing production, an amazing choir, and a slideshow that went with the presentation. And I kept thinking about the show we're about to do today, because while slavery ended legally in America in the 1860s, 1865, the issue of slavery is still with us. The issue of slavery is called human trafficking. It is an issue that engulfs the entire planet. It may be among one or two largest industries, money-making industries in the entire world. Makes more money than drug trafficking. And we traffic in men and women. And some of them are sexual slaves. Some of them are slaves in factories in the fields of our country and countries around the world. And it's unseen. So the emancipation, so in many ways, this is an emancipation struggle. And I was approached some weeks back by Leon Henry when we met at another event. Leon Henry's director of outreach, Big Brothers and Sisters of Greater Chesapeake, who's in the studio with us. And he raised this issue, said, can we come on to talk about this in our area, something we're deeply involved with at Big Brothers, Big Sisters. And I said, absolutely. We did shows about this before. We need to kind of push this envelope a little further. And then he raised the name of Natalie Mead, who also joins the studio, who I met briefly before, who's the director of training and quality-based mentoring for Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Greater Chesapeake. She joins in the studio as well, and good to have you both with us here.
Thank you very much.
And we said, let's expand this conversation. And they reached out to other people, and Tina Bigdelli is with us. Tina Bigdelli is a Maryland Outreach and Direct Services Program Manager for FAIR Girls. Good to have you with us, Tina.
Thank you for having me.
And Lisa Carrasco is with us, who is partnership liaison with Araminta Freedom Initiative. Of course, we just talked about before, one of the first name of Harriet Tubman,
yes,
her real name. And we'll talk about that program as well. So, Lisa, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And as would have it, the serendipity of existence, late last week, I was approached by Philip Martin, who is a senior investigative reporter at WGBH-FM in Boston, which is one of our sister stations, and he is one of the best investigative reporters in public radio. Does incredible work and has been doing this whole series and has been doing on trafficking of men and women around the world, and was going to come to Baltimore today to continue that story out of Baltimore. So it just all kind of flowed together that he will be here shortly. If he gets here in time from the airport, he'll join us in studio. If not, he'll at least have a chance to meet the people here who do the work. So he can continue his work here in Baltimore. And folks, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you very much.
And please join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Or jump onto our Facebook page. Love to see what you have to say there. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. And Stephanie Mudrone is one of our producers. Even though she's physically on the mend, she's still working. And she will check those tweets and let me know that you're here. 410-319-8888. Please join us. So talk to us about – the last thing you would think about is that Big Brothers and Big Sisters would be involved in the issue of human trafficking.
Yes. What a fit. Well, you know, we were approached by FAIR Girls. They were doing some really great work within the area, new to the area, and came to meet with them. And after hearing about their program and the issue of human trafficking – It fit in one way because with Big Brothers Big Sisters, we have a lot of children within our program, those who are matched and those who are currently waiting to be matched. And what a great opportunity to be able to get that message out to the youth that we're serving. The other way, though, that I saw that it's a fit is because if we can get individuals involved in the lives of youth prior to what may happen or could happen to them and their adolescence, if we can prevent them from hanging out with the wrong crowd or running away from home, if we can provide some structure and stability through a mentor, what a great opportunity for volunteers to be able to instill some empowerment, some self-confidence, some self-worth within our youth before they go down a certain track and so or a certain path in their life. And so it's just a wonderful connection. And I think that our program, with our outreach to families in Baltimore and throughout the state of Maryland, I think we could be an assistance to those who are doing the work throughout the nation.
So, and I want to just to identify yourselves so people understand what the groups are. And she called you out first. Let me go to you first. What about Fair Girls? Just talk to our listeners about what that is.
So Fair Girls is an anti-trafficking organization. It was started in Washington, D.C., and we have three main program areas. We do prevention education, case management, and we have a economic empowerment program called Jewel Girls. And the economic empowerment program we do in D.C. as well as several other countries, Serbia, Russia, Uganda, Montenegro. We do case management in D.C. and a few of those countries as well. And in January, we partner with an organization called Love 146 to expand our programs to Maryland with a focus on Baltimore. And so right now we're focusing on prevention education. We've partnered with Turnaround to make sure that any referrals, any clients get the case management that they need. And Araminta is working with us so that we can make sure that all the adults that we're working with are getting trained.
And what is Araminta?
Araminta Freedom Initiative is a nonprofit organization that was started in this area. Our vision basically is to see in this generation the commercial viability of the human trafficking of minors in the Baltimore region dismantled and its victims freed. And so we see this as a possibility in our area as long as we have a community working together as one. And our main goal is to do this through prevention, systemic economic deterrence, intervention, and provision for aftercare. And so this partnership right now with Fair Girls is and Big Brothers Big Sisters is also a part of our prevention training and intervention, because we do agree with what Natalie was saying and Tina as well, that prevention is huge. If we can, help to instill confidence and self-worth in these youth before they have someone that is going to prey on their vulnerabilities, then we're actually setting them up for success as far as not making them the prey.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the huge implications of this and what's happening around the world and around our country. But I think this is one of these things that Philip Martin in one of his pieces did when he did it about a small community in Massachusetts, that this is pervasive but hidden. Mm-hmm. Nobody sees it. It's around us all the time. It could be in the nail salon you go to. It could be anywhere. It could be in the house that we don't even see what's going on behind closed doors in someone's home. I mean, this happens all around us, and we just don't see it.
Yes. Well, part of it is also that we do see it, we just don't recognize it for what it is.
What do you mean by that? We see it, but we don't recognize it.
So when you see people in the sex industry working in the street, working the corner in Baltimore City, no one looks at them as a human being, that they were a child they were probably a child when they got started. The average age of entry is 12 to 14 years old into the sex industry. I mean, if you're under the age of 18.
The average age of entry is 12 to 14.
Yes.
Average age.
The average age of entry.
So does that mean many kids are younger than that?
Absolutely. That means that they enter older as well as younger. I've heard of youth entering the industry as young as 8-9 years old.
And, well, let me just stop you for a minute. I'll let you finish your whole thought.
Sure.
But I mean, we just kind of pull out what you're saying. We're talking about, okay, when we think of 8- and 9-year-old girls, or 12-year-old girls even, in the sex trade, we often think of Thailand. We think of some other country. We don't think of the United States of America.
Correct.
With American girls. But you're talking about not just girls who are illegally brought here or brought here for other purposes. You're talking about young girls in this country born here that are in the sex trade.
Absolutely. And it's not just girls that are victims. Boys are also victims.
Absolutely.
And boys actually usually enter at a much younger age. So I always like to put that out there because we talk about girls a lot. Most of the services out there are for girls.
Right.
And so we're kind of lagging and kind of catching up to that. But yeah, I mean, it's 95% of victims of 90 to 95% of victims of human trafficking in the United States are American born. So it's a crazy statistic.
90% are American born.
Yeah, are American born. And when we think of it, we always, just like you said, we think of, you know, people kind of coming here to become a nanny or a maid. And although that does happen, most of the victims that we work with and that we hear about are American born. And it's, I mean, it's crazy because we just don't recognize it for what it is.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you corrected me as I spoke, because it is, that was a gender clouded perception on my part.
So. But it's very common.
It's very common. My guess is this also affects in America disproportionately communities of color and poor communities of color in America.
Absolutely. It's represented in Baltimore that way as well. Yes. And children in the foster care system as well. They're part of that. Just one thing I wanted to touch on that you were started to say, Tina, is that when we're looking at numbers, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and most agencies and organizations that are doing this work agree that the average annual amount of children that are trafficked in the United States is anywhere between 100 and 300,000 each year. So we throw these numbers out there, and a lot of times we just think that's a number. But when you think and you try and visualize what that looks like, in Baltimore, we can do it this way. We can look at M&T Stadium and Camden Yards together. Fill both of those, and we're talking about the lower end of the spectrum here when we give that range.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's a crazy amount of children each year that are, you know, being sold in this industry. And we don't have the exit numbers. What we do know is that through the FBI, you know, their average age of lifespan of a child that's brought into DMST, and we call it that, it's domestic minor sex trafficking, is 7 years, because it's a very tough life for them. Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, what we're talking about are literally millions of children.
Yes.
If that's the number that rotates through,
mm-hmm. right,
we're talking about millions of children.
And we're just beginning to get a grasp of how large this problem is here, because for a long time, and I know, Tina, you can speak to this, the United States wasn't part of any kind of scope when we were looking at the problem. Again, you mentioned it. We look overseas. We look at other countries. We were in denial that it was even happening here in the United States for quite a while.
And just to kind of touch upon what Lisa was saying, and even what Tina was starting to say as well, as far as it is going on and we see it, we just don't recognize it. And I think sometimes, especially when it comes to our youth, we have an attitude of if we see someone outside at 3 o'clock in the morning and they have on, you know, certain clothing, oh, we want to now just think negative of them. We have no idea what's going on in that young lady's life. And when I had an opportunity, I went on Fair Girls' website and saw a documentary that Lisa Ling did, 3 a.m. Girls. And I actually got convicted myself, is because sometimes I'll be in D.C. or in Baltimore, and I'm like, this girl needs to be home. And, you know, she may not have a home to go to, or who knows what her home life is like. And so we as adults, we as a community really need to shift our mindset on what's happening within our communities.
So what, I'm sorry, go ahead, Leon.
And that is a sort of a great segue into, again, you mentioned why it's Big Brother, Big Sisters involved. Folks who've heard me talk before know that I focus a lot on men.
Right.
And why this is so important is because we as men need to change the image that we present for girls. And also, we need to start having these conversations to boys, because there's a market out there for this. And that market primarily is men who prey on young children, who prey on girls. And we as men have to step up and let boys know the girls are not objects, the girls are not toys. That's how we start changing, at least on this end, how we start changing it for the future.
Because one of the things, before I come back here, I want to ask you a question, Tina, about something that you raised, Natalie. That whether we're talking about the sex trade and trafficking, or whether we're talking about men and women who are working as slaves in fields and factories here in the United States of America, it's men who are pushing the trade.
Right.
And men who are pushing the business.
But there's also females.
There are.
But just so we make this clear.
But clearly, the vast majority of the industry is fueled by men looking for younger boys or men looking for women.
And we call that demand. So when we're talking about that, we're talking about the demand. But what I would just want to make sure that we let our listeners know is that when we think about a trafficker, and we use the term pimp because that's the same thing. A trafficker is a pimp. And when we think about them, we often think it's only male. And we have to make sure that we're opening up our eyes to see that it's also females that are being used and trained into being pimps as well. And so young girls, young boys, they can be recruited by a female and not realize that that's a pimp. And so we need to make sure that that misconception is made clear as well.
Right. And I guess and I agree completely. And but the reason I just pushed what I pushed was because I'm not letting our gender off the hook here.
Thank you. It's
not women who fuel the Bangkok trade.
Right.
It's men who fuel the Bangkok trade of going to places like Bangkok to find young girls to pay to sleep with and have sex with.
Right. And I'm so glad you used that term pimp because that term in our community has become cool.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Sort of been co-opted. And I'm so glad that, pimps are not good people. Mm-hmm. Stop calling your little 5-year-old a pimp. Mm-hmm. Stop saying that your 10-year-old is dressing like a pimp. That is someone who preys on the most vulnerable people in our community. Mm-hmm. And that's a villain. That's not something to be admired. So I'm glad you called it out.
Yeah, we're trying to change our vocabulary and our misconceptions around all of this. I think just for a moment, if you don't mind, Mark, I just want to back up and make sure that everyone listening understands when we're saying, especially today because we're talking really about youth and children here, domestic minor sex trafficking, when we look at children or anyone under the age of 18 involved in a commercial sex act, anyone under the age of 18, regardless of whether or not we perceive them to be willing participants or not, they are considered a victim of human trafficking. Mm-hmm.
Even if they say they want to do it. And and minors, I mean, they will rarely ever admit up front that they want to do that, that they are a victim. It's something that you have to kind of work through because it's a coping mechanism.
Someone has trained them to believe that. Someone has taught them or showed them the way. It's not their idea that just is formed naturally in their own mind that I'm going to do this. It comes through media influence. It comes through relationships in their lives and circumstances of where they live or where they stay. But just so we understand, because I think a lot of us, like you were saying, Natalie, when you drive and you see this young girl, she needs to go home. And we're thinking it's her choice to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And really what we need to see is she's a victim. If she's involved in a commercial sex act and she is this young girl, that's how she needs to be received and treated as well. So the services are now becoming available for these young women and boys because now we're understanding they don't have this choice.
Exactly. I want you to come back for just a second.
Mm-hmm.
When you talked about the film that you made, I think there's some of the stories that I think it's important to kind of repersonalize this. Talk about that a bit.
Well, our organization was featured on Lisa Ling's the show Our America that Lisa Ling hosts. She featured Fair Girls as well as another organization called Courtney's House and a few others and talked about the commercial sex industry in Washington, D.C. and basically who it's affected. She even showed one of the popular tracks in D.C., which is a strip where girls are sold. And she also touched on different websites because that's really what we're seeing now is the trend is that children are being sold online, even more so. They're being recruited and sold online. And so that's also we're seeing that's the new track is how we're addressing it. So we've also been on the Katie Kirk Show. I haven't personally, but our executive director and one of my colleagues. So we've definitely been trying to reach out and get the word out on what's been going on in D.C. and all over the country.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the missing pieces here, just in terms of what really fuels this? I mean, this is, there's always the kind of, for want of a better term, the financial corporate underbelly to all of this. This is not a mom and pop operation. These are not just people deciding, okay, I want to pimp some girls or young boys, or I'm going to fool these women into coming to America from Slovenia or Vietnam to come to America, then we're going to throw them in the sex trade as soon as they get here. It's much more organized and insidious than all that.
It's both. I mean, yeah, it kind of happens on lots of different levels. I mean, the number one reason this happens is because it makes a lot of money. It's a business, right? The same reason why the Confederacy didn't want to end slavery during the Civil War is because it's free labor. And with people, when you're selling them, whether it's for sex or for some other kind of labor, you can use them over and over again, which is why human trafficking has become the second largest criminal industry in the world. So, I mean, that's the number one motivation behind it. And it can be organized through gangs, and it could also be just, you know, somebody that lives in a neighborhood that just knows what to do, or it could be a couple that's decided that they want to do this to their children. I mean, it's a wide range of pimps. A pimp can be anybody. A pimp can be anybody. It can be a mom and pop shop. It can be a massage parlor. It can be the guy working the corner.
But what I'm saying is, and I know you challenged it a bit here for a second, but everything I've read and everything I've seen from the reports is that while mom and pop might run the shop, they don't do the importing.
Well, you're talking about foreign nationals.
And they also don't. And yeah. They also don't do the networking in our country. I mean, this is.
Mm-hmm. And I just have to say that most of our focus has been on the domestic side of things, mm-hmm. only because there is a lack. You mentioned what's a lack, or what's lacking, and services for domestic minor sex trafficking victims is lacking. We see that because we knew about foreign victims of human trafficking prior to recognizing that it was our own children that were being bought and sold here, that we just are now, like Tina said, we're playing catch up. We're trying to provide services. But again, you start to identify more and more victims. And now we're starting to recognize how difficult it is to get those services for minors, because there are so many loopholes you need to jump through, and it makes it tough.
Leon, you're about to say something?
Well, you also mentioned the parallel with drug trafficking. And one of the things we've done in society is treatment for addicts and education. And one of the missing pieces, again, is really outreach to communities, outreach to children, about warning signs, and again, about educating young people to keep them away from ever entering the trade. And also, again, to have open conversations with men about how you perceive women, how you look at little girls, what your role, and again, not, hopefully I don't sound too sexist, but I grew up in a community where your role as a man was to be a protector,
mm-hmm.
not someone who exploited the community. Your job was to protect. So when my dad, if he came home from Beth Steele at 2 a.m. and saw a young girl someplace, I mean, his he felt paternal, you know, you need to be somewhere, you know, what's going on. And that's what we need to get back to. That's the missing piece, that we allow men to – it's okay for men to view women as objects to be bought and sold. Mm-hmm. We even encourage that from a very young age. You know, we encourage little boys to have, you know, 4 and 5 women and to be – we just don't encourage men to be responsible and to see women and little girls as human beings.
So, I mean, I'm sorry, Tina.
I just want to add to that. I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that is a big piece of it. And that's why prevention is so important. With our program, we address that. We address the way the media views women, the way the media views men, the language that we use. And also, we challenge men to take, and boys, because we're in schools and classrooms, we challenge them to take ownership of their actions and the way that they treat people. And that's why also strategic partnerships are so important with community-based organizations like Big Brothers Big Sisters, the Airmen to Freedom Initiative, Turnaround, Love 146. We all have to work together with law enforcement. This wasn't happening before because there wasn't enough awareness around it, but we all have to work together in order to prevent this from happening in the first place.
Well, we'll take a break and come back to that and to what you said, Leon. 410-319-8888. Join us here. Your thoughts on sex trafficking and trafficking of men and women in this country and around the world, how we can deal with it, how do you attack it. This is not, it's very different in some ways dealing with drug trafficking, people taking legalized drugs, but we certainly don't want to legalize sex trafficking. We'll be right back.
Keep on pushing. Keep on pushing. I've got to keep on pushing. Can't stop now. Move up a little higher. Some way or somehow. 'Cause I've
got my strength, and it don't make sense not to keep on pushing.
Curtis Mayfield, his birthday. On the way back to this conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. And we are here with talking about trafficking, sexual trafficking, human trafficking in our country and in our world. We are joined by Natalie Mead, Director of Training and Quality-Based Mentoring at Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Greater Chesapeake, Jan Henry, Director of Outreach for Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Greater Chesapeake, Tina Bigdelli, who is Maryland Outreach and Direct Services Program Manager for Fair Girls, and Lisa Carrasco, who is Partnership Liaison with Araminta Freedom Initiative. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. We'll be checking those emails and jump on our Facebook page. I'll be looking at that in a moment. Or tweet us at Mark Steiner. And Diletta in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Diletta. Welcome. You're on the air. Diletta, do we have her up? Diletta, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you. Yes, I love the coincidence of the universe or not. Next Sunday, June 9th, at Morgan State University, actually in the Murphy Fine Arts Center, I am putting on a concert event to raise funds and awareness for the Samaritan Women, which is a residential facility here in Baltimore that provides long-term care for women who are survivors of human trafficking.
So tell people about that bit, just for a second again. Where is that? When is
it? Sure. It's next Sunday from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Murphy Fine Arts Center on the campus of Morgan State University. The event is called Spring to Life 3, Triumphant, and it is a celebration of my CD release, but also a fundraiser, again, for the Samaritan Women. And so I'm going to have two other artists on the bill with me, Tapora Bilizikian and also Alma Chandra, two amazing local singer-songwriters. And we're just going to raise funds and awareness for the Samaritan Women.
Well, send that information to us. We'll make sure we help promote it on the air here.
Sure, I will do that.
Thank you so much, Diletta. And you have an event coming up around this as well.
We do. On June 22nd, from 10 to 2, we are actually doing a training, an awareness training called Tell Your Friends. And I added a piece to it, Preventing Exploitation with Education and Empowerment. Our presenters are Fair Girls and Araminta Freedom Initiative. And so it's for youth in middle school, high school, 12 and up. As you heard Tina mention, the average age is 12 to 14. So we want to provide that education as young as 12 for this training. And then also any mentors, parents, guardians, any concerned citizens that really want to understand human trafficking, what's going on in our communities, and how they can help empower and educate their peers so that we can all speak out against this issue.
And I want to add to that, sons, fathers, bring your sons. Mm-hmm. You know, moms, bring your sons. This is not just about girls. This is about boys and men as well. So mm-hmm. I can't say that enough.
Yeah. Individuals can actually go on our website, www.biglittle.org, to get information and to register. It is a free training as well. So definitely come out to support that.
We were talking before during the break a little bit about, I was saying to you, Tina, when you raised earlier in the program about the kind of looking at the end of slavery in America and how partially that was fueled by free labor. And I said that, and I said it was correct. And I said, but then I said, but during the break, I said that that part of the issue around slavery was also that you couldn't have had the kind of slavery we had in America without racism that was created by the system that we live in. And that is fueled by the dehumanizing of an entire segment of the world, Africans, as being less than human. And the trade we're talking about is also fueled by misogyny, which crosses every culture, every nation, every place on the globe that fuels this idea that we own, we men,
mm-hmm. right.
own women, and they do what we want them to do.
Yep. Yep. It's about power and control.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would even say that, you know, racism does tie into this because if and I mean, we know this just from the media. When kids are missing, who do we see on TV? It's usually a little white girl that we see on TV. But if it's an African-American, Hispanic,
right.
Asian child, Asian-American child, I mean, we rarely hear about it. And when you run away from home, you're even more likely to be approached by a pimp and a trafficker because guess what? You don't have a place to stay. You don't have anything to eat. And you're hanging around bus stations, malls, you know, all the places that traffickers know to go to recruit.
And like you said, when men travel, you know, they're going to Bangkok. They're mm-hmm. going to Uganda. They're going to places where people are brown and poor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it is true that what Chin was just saying is there's been an issue on the show many times, which is that people, we do not focus on, like in this city, on African American girls who are missing. They just become not part of. Names aren't all over the right. newspaper. The names are not on TV screens. And that is just commonplace.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also this acceptance somewhat in our culture that it's okay or it's accepted that she's made this choice to go and maybe she's staying with her older boyfriend or this guy is taking care of her. And it's seen as a way of life. It's just become an accepted practice. But what we're not recognizing or seeing the truth here is that she's a minor and this is not acceptable. And this person does not have her best interest at heart most times. But maybe their family's in a situation where they can't take care of her. Or she's leaving a situation which wasn't safe for her either.
Right.
There's just so many other parts going on that are overlooked. And sometimes it's just the easier choice, but it's not necessarily the best choice.
Right. And Lisa brings up a good point, too. I mean, a lot of these youth who may happen to run away and become a runaway or homeless youth may be fleeing from mm-hmm. abuse within their home, mm-hmm. sexual abuse within their home, or just situations that they just don't feel comfortable in. And unfortunately, then they're out there running around because they need a place to belong. Mm-hmm. And as Tina mentioned, you know, they may be at the bus stops and everything. And so now they're vulnerable. And unfortunately, this is where the trafficking can come into play.
We used to have a program at the Waxter Center couple of years ago mm-hmm. where we matched girls at the detention center with a mentor inside who followed them once they were outside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the exact number, but something like 80% of those girls reported that they had a sexual abuse history in the past who were at this detention center. I mean, this is, again, we talk about, we don't always see it, but this is Baltimore City. This is happening right here. That's a huge number of those girls there who reported that they had this kind of experience at home, which led to them being out and doing delinquent activities, which landed them in a Waxer Center.
Tina? Mm-hmm.
So I just want to point out the statistic is 80 to 90% of victims of trafficking have a history of sexual abuse or abuse in the home prior to entering the commercial sex industry. That's a crazy statistic.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crazy statistic. That means that this is basically a job requirement.
Hmm.
And I think it speaks a lot on those of us that, you know about the effects of sexual abuse. I mean, it affects your value of yourself, how you view yourself. You know, your self-worth is tied to sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy for somebody to exploit that. And it's also easy for somebody to see that maybe you have low self-esteem or that you're going through a lot because you don't feel safe at home. And when we're talking about the average age of entry is as young as 12 to 14 years old, that means that the abuse is happening by somebody that they trust.
Right.
Right? Somebody that they trust because who else has access to a 12-year-old?
Or younger.
Or younger, absolutely.
Right, right, right.
And I just keep thinking about, you know, it's hard to wrap your head around the fact that that statistic is national. And so, again, mm-hmm. this problem goes beyond Baltimore, Maryland, the children being abused. But the other point is that when you're that young, you probably don't understand that this isn't normal, that this isn't happening to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't see yourself as a victim or someone where someone is doing something wrong to me, because how often are we talking to our children about the fact that, you know, what's okay I guess, proper touch, or what areas of me are just for me? Are we, you know, is this a conversation that's happening at home? Probably not. Is it happening in schools? I doubt it.
And I, a couple things popped in my head as you were all were describing this, and what you were just saying, Tina, and what you all said earlier. Let's think about this for a moment. If we're saying that 90% of the girls and some of the boys who are pushed into sex trafficking in our communities had been victims of sexual abuse, and you said earlier, Lisa Carrasco, that 300,000 kids are processed with this.
Upwards, yeah. A year.
So is one of the things that we're not tackling because it's too difficult to tackle is the prevalence of sexual abuse that goes on every day in the apartment next to us, in the house next to us, the kid that may be in our classroom. I mean, how pervasive is this, and what does that say about our own culture and what we have we're not wrestling with? Really, the underlying issue, one of the underlying issues here is the amount of sexual abuse that takes place that we don't want to talk about. Because one of the things that my wife says to me all the time, and she and I talked about this, are the number of women that we know. I would say the more than half of the women we know have told her, told me, told their friends a story of being raped or sexually abused.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the underbelly that we're not talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think the national statistic is that 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys will be raped, stalked, or experience intimate partner violence before the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
Before the age of 18. So that just says how prevalent this is. And it's really hard to identify because as a society, we still victim blame.
Right.
You know, if somebody is raped, well, why were you there? Why were you drinking? What were you wearing? When we ask these questions, you already naturally feel shame and guilt. It just pushes that. And then the other part of it is that at least when it comes to trafficking and when it comes to other types of sexual abuse, the first person that you tell is really important. And oftentimes these kids who don't necessarily have the right language for it will try to reach out, but us adults that are in their lives are not recognizing it. And then when they get shut down that first time, they're just going to assume that no one else is going to believe them.
Right.
That's why mentors are so important, positive role models. That's why it's important to talk to your kids, be open, have these discussions, because if you don't, they're going to hide it from you.
Right.
It's already hard enough to talk about it, but if you're not open to the discussion, then, I mean, it just shuts them down.
And that's, I'm sorry, and that's why, though, this education piece is important. This awareness is important because many people just don't know. I mean, to be quite honest, they know what's happening, but they don't know of the warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know of how prevalent it is in Baltimore City or throughout the nation. And so that's why we felt it was important for us as a mentoring organization to teach our mentors so that, I mean, honestly, you don't know. They could even be mentoring a child who is being trapped. You don't know. And so this is why we want to make sure that they are equipped with that knowledge so they can begin to, depending on the trust and the relationship they have with their mentee, to start having these conversations that they may not get at home or they may not get at school or within the community.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I this could be a discussion we can continue another day just about the prevalence of sexual abuse in our cultures and our society. And not just the United States of America, we're talking about the world.
Yes.
And I think that this is, the more we do programs like this, the more the power of misogyny to fuel the cultures of the planet is being seared into my brain. Because it has to do with what you were talking about, Leon, as well. Just the whole idea of it's in some ways the male-dominated power part of our society, that consciousness has to change.
Absolutely.
There has to be a battle to change that if we're ever going to get to the root of changing this that we're talking about in terms of human trafficking and what happens to young girls in our society.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's even, I mean, not just with women. I mean, even the men who prey on younger boys.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all about power. It's that same power trip.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm bigger, stronger. I can do anything I want with you.
Mm-hmm. One of he was coming from Boston, so I didn't think Philip Martin would make it in. He was going to try, but I know it's tough to get from the airport to here.
Right.
But he's looking forward to meeting all of you when this program is over. One of the pieces he wrote about, and this is talking about the overseas aspect of this, as I was reading his work, I'd never thought about it until I read it, was that the the root of sex trafficking in places like Thailand is the war, was the Vietnam War, where these places opened up so that the brothers who fought in Vietnam would have a place to have outlets to go to, whether they were in Saigon or Bangkok. That part of that war from our country waged built that sex industry in Southeast Asia. And I never thought about that until I read his reports, but there's all these kind of insidious links that we really have to be aware of if we're going to even think about how to root out what is amongst us.
Absolutely. There's no simple solution. It's a, you know, there's a lot of factors that contribute to it. There's a lot of factors that contribute to it.
I think you have to be willing to step back from the issue and look at it from this huge God-sized perspective. And if you do that, you start to recognize that all players in this are slaves. Mm-hmm. The pimp is a slave to the greed and the money, the lust for money. The buyer is enslaved to the desires to be entertained or this lust that I have to have fulfilled or for what I want to do. The child or the victim may be someone who is just weak and vulnerable and enslaved by the fact of I don't have my basic needs being met. The only person or the only winner in that whole equation, I'm sorry, I'm just going to put it out there, is Satan. So if we step back and we look at it from a Christian point of view, and this is just where I come from, I'm looking at it this way going, okay, the only answer is, again, that whole society perspective of seeing that this guy that wants to buy and this demand, he's also enslaved. He needs to understand that you have these invisible chains that are tying you down to this addiction as well. Mm-hmm. You need to be set free from this as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to come from, yeah, it's not going to come from the shame, the guilt, the condemnation. We're not going to, you know, want to plaster your name and put your face on a billboard. That's not going to free you from that. That's only going to tie you to a label that you can't escape.
Right.
But there's freedom in understanding who you are, right? Mm-hmm. And so who am I in Christ? How am I going to break free from this? There's freedom, but you have to want it until you hit that bottom.
But I think in some ways you have to take it beyond a kind of a religious realm because there are people involved in this who are have nothing to do with being Christians.
I understand that.
Or maybe coming from an Islamic world. It could be coming from a Buddhist world or a Jewish world. The prostitution takes place in Israel that people don't want to talk about.
Right.
But all that is there. Let me introduce him. I just called his name out and said he probably wouldn't make it through, but here he is. Philip Martin.
Fast taxi driver. But he couldn't do anything but traffic. That's right.
It's good to have you here. Philip
Martin. It's a pleasure,
Martin. Is a senior investigative reporter at WGBH in Boston, our sister station, senior fellow with the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism and 2012 Center for Journalists for the Ford Foundation Fellow, who's done an incredible series of work on trafficking, among other things. Mm-hmm. And welcome. Good to have you with us in the studio, Philip. And I think it's amazing that you actually wrote Friday and all this kind of happened, serendipitous in many ways.
Well, it was serendipitous. And Baltimore is one of the places that I targeted or looked at, I should say, in Underground Trade, the series that you're referring to, Mark. Underground Trade, of course, is a term to talk about that identifies human trafficking among other illicit acts and trades out there that basically span the globe. Human trafficking is a multi-billion-dollar business, as your guests have no doubt pointed out. And what I was looking at was the fact that you have roots. Literal roots, you have domestic trafficking, of course, which is the bulk of the trafficking. The young girls and women and young boys and men often being super exploited by individuals making money. It occurs in Boston. It occurs in Baltimore. It takes place all over the place, as your guests know, you know, like directly. They know what happens here. What I was looking at in Underground Trade is the fact that you have a route that basically begins in Asia, among many routes, but this is just one of the routes I was looking at, that lands in New York. A lot of this happens when individuals declare refugee status. Sometimes it happens just when they come over as students. Various ways of getting here. They've been promised a job. That job doesn't exist. They then wind up in a massage parlor. One young woman I looked at had come in from China. She came to New York, stayed in Chinatown for a little while. They said, well, I'm sorry, that job doesn't exist. But she found herself in a van the next day being driven all over the East Coast, ended up in Baltimore, right here in Baltimore, in a massage parlor.
and her life as a slave, and that's what it would have been, was cut short because of the Baltimore police. They just happened to raid this particular massage parlor several days after she arrived in the United States. But others, of course, have found themselves in the life involuntarily as a result of many other circumstances. It's not, of course, just immigration. It's sometimes it's as simple as walking to school, as your guest had pointed out, walking to school. And you being this happened in Boston, a very famous case we have up there, the Tavares case, where three young women walking to school in the Dorchester area of Boston were basically picked up off the street, pushed into vans, and found themselves 3 or 4 years in prostituted by these men who we oftentimes glorify as pimps, but these are human traffickers, these are slavers. And the underground trade is very vast. It includes routes, but we also know that trafficking can happen with people standing still. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go anywhere to be trafficked. It's a misleading term. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful term, but it's a misleading term. You can be trafficked by someone breaking into your home, and all of a sudden, you know, you find yourself, and I'm referring to a case out of New York, Queens, where a woman was basically held captive in her home and prostituted by individuals who basically, again, involved in trafficking, but without the actual movement, which trafficking, of course, infers, Mark.
That's why I think this conversation we're having today on this on our program has to go beyond just this one episode, and it just feeds into what I was talking about earlier, just the whole bit we've been taking lately about talking a lot about misogyny and what is the underbelly of our society that we're afraid to tackle because we don't know how to tackle it. People are afraid to talk about it because they don't know how to get to it. You know, it's so ingrained in many ways, like racism is ingrained in the American soil. This misogyny is ingrained in humankind, and somehow we're just now at the point where, because of the work that you all are doing, we're unearthing it,
right,
and maybe beginning the process of change and liberation. That's part of what you're involved in. I mean, what you're doing is literally, to me, like the work of the abolitionist.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good way of putting it. Right. And there are abolitionists around the world. Yeah. People sitting in this room. they know that they have to take on this this mammoth task. Someone has to do it. Because you're right, misogyny is like racism. It's like many of these isms. It's ingrained, and you basically have to, first of all, acknowledge that among men and many women, you know, that you can be misogynistic because of those cultural trends in our society which says you have permission to treat a woman this way. And we basically have to we have to tackle, you know, those isms in our society. Mm-hmm. If in fact we're going to make a dent in what is a multi-billion-dollar industry.
And we do that by holding one another accountable. Right. I think that's where it starts, right? You hold your friends accountable. You have to be that conversation killer at happy hour when, you know, they're throwing around the word pimp, right, or they're talking about holding around, and then you're like, that's not funny. They say, oh, so-and-so raped me. They're talking about, you know, somebody taking advantage of them. I'm like, that's not funny. You're totally desensitizing everyone around you to that word and that term.
Or even the we went to a breakfast a couple of weeks ago where we talked about this. Even for young boys now, mm-hmm. when they talk about attraction to women, to girls, mm-hmm. you know, in the old days, you talk about how you liked her, you thought she was cute, and now you use terms that are violent.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, I want to tear that up, I want to get...
Right.
It's all associated with violence. It's not associated with any sort of romance. Mm-hmm. Again, because that's how we see women. That's how they're presented to us. Mm-hmm. That's how we're training our young boys. Mm-hmm. That's where we need men to come in and start saying, no, this is not going to continue.
Because that imagery has become acceptable.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if you don't view women like that, there's something wrong with you.
Somebody's going to revoke your man card.
Right, absolutely.
Right. You don't live in the man box, so right. Sorry.
Well, I just want to say I want to thank you all for being here. We will come back and have you all back and talk to people that you've been working with who have been involved and how they're struggling and ended as well from the inside out. And we'll be continuing our conversations to deal directly with issues of misogyny and gender issues that I think we have to wrestle with, that are very uncomfortable for us to wrestle with, but they have to be wrestled with. I want to thank both Natalie Mead and Leon Henry from Big Brothers of Greater Chesapeake, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, excuse me. Your information will be on our website, steinershow.org.
We'll connect
to the event you're having. Tina Bigdelli, it's been a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
Outreach and Direct Services Program Manager for Fair Girls. That information on Fair Girls will be on our website as well. And Lisa Carrasco, who is the partnership liaison with Araminta Freedom Initiative. That connection will be on our website as well. We were pleased to have Philip Martin, who's visiting us in Baltimore, special investigative reporter from WGBH, doing stories on this. Incredible. So we're going to link to his work on our website because you really need to see the work he's been doing around trafficking in this 7 or 8-part series that I was able to kind of look at very quickly, knowing he was going to come on the air. And it needs more time. It's an incredible piece of work. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for the work you're doing with this as well.
I appreciate it. I appreciate all the work you're doing. Thank you.
And on the way out of here, I have to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or 877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Stephanie Mavronis, and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers are Andre Melton. Our interns, Lila Warshaw. Theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. And to hear this show again, to podcast our shows, find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And remember, you can listen and download all of our programming on iTunes now. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, stay tuned. My friend Michelle Martin is coming up with Tell Me More. Don't go away. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.